Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Today is Thursday, December 5th, as we welcome Jen back to the studio. Welcome,
Ooh,
Jen.
Hey.
Well,
it going?
You welcome me back, too, because
yeah,
I took a few days off.
How'd that feel?
It felt good. You know,
amazing.
Slept in a little late.
Good.
But
did you get
I
a chance to
show.
Hit that cafe yet?
No, not yet. The cannabis cafe, no. I've got both my kids wanting to go with me, so it's just a question of when.
Yeah.
I did go out with them the other night, though, and it was amazing. We had the best time. And, you know, just considering that, less than a year ago, they weren't speaking to me. Neither one of them was.
Oh, what brats.
I know. So now things are good. We're back in touch, and I'm happy. But talking about cannabis and stuff, what's in the news is that I guess Willie Nelson, you know, who he is, the king of weed, right?
Of course.
He announced that he quit smoking and he's going to go into vaping and edibles.
Because yeah, but vaping's already out.
I know, and vaping is shit anyway.
Edibles,
just as bad.
I get, but
right.
I'm surprised he wasn't already on the edible
I know,
train.
But,
I feel like.
Well, maybe he is, but he said that, he's trying to save his lungs, which is probably a little too late, which is, incidentally, it's kind of a decision I made first of all, I wasn't going to smoke anything since my stroke and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been getting, like, really depressed not getting high and shit, you know? I mean, I get bored. So, mm-hmm.
Definitely a little brain vacay.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I didn't want to mess with my brain with the weed and stuff, but... You know what? It's hard to get through life without it. So
yeah.
I decided I'm going to have an edible every now and then, not smoke anything.
That's
you know?
Okay.
And yeah.
So. Your tolerance will be much lower. You know.
Yeah, it is now. You
my
know?
Favorite product that I've found since I've been out here has been these little sublingual strips. So that comes in this little thing. They do 0.5. Is it 0.5? I think it's like 5 and then 10 milligram.
Uh-huh.
And so if you take one,
right.
You just have this nice, relaxing,
wow,
chill
that's
feeling.
Not a lot of it, though.
No, but if you take 10, you have like...
Right.
But what's great about it is you let it dissolve under your tongue. It hits you within 10 to 15 minutes, and it only lasts 2 to 3 hours.
Wow.
Because my biggest problem with edibles is that sometimes you're just like in the hole for like a whole work shift,
whole day,
you know what I
right.
mean? You're just like, oh, like sometimes you're like, okay, I'm ready to like stop.
Or yeah, you gotta know when to do it and how
yeah,
much.
Yeah, or you
it.
Fall asleep. Yeah. The worst is when you take one and fall asleep and you wake up like 10 hours later. You're like, I
right.
just wasted that edible and wasted my day. Like, what is going on? Yeah,
I know,
but these strips are great. You should try them.
I will.
Yeah.
But what I do is I make butter because I have this little machine that makes butter.
Yeah,
you just put the weed and the butter in there, and it gives you like can of butter is what they call it. And then I make cookies, you know, and stuff. And so I only had like a little bit.
You know, your tolerance is probably very low.
It
now.
Is.
Yeah,
I haven't
it's
done
nice.
Any for 2 months, you know.
Yeah.
So I was tripping. I mean, not
I
tripping.
Bet.
I was just having
I mean,
fun.
Sometimes it gets like that. You're like, well, it's like what you see in movies in the 90s, you know?
Right, exactly. But I kept myself in shape and tried not to make a fool out of myself. But I never do, you know? I
not
mean,
like
I just,
overeat.
I can
oh, you
handle
said it doesn't
it,
make you eat.
Yeah, well, it did.
I know, it's the worst. It's like eating saltines and peanut butter. I'm like, this is the best snack ever.
I know. We went out, had some chicken wings, so
that's
I had
good.
A little more than I should have.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You gotta live a little sometimes.
Exactly, you know.
So, have you tried using, like, a plant-based butter, since I know you're trying to
no,
keep away
really.
From?
No, not really. It was, well, because this was left over from before I went to the hospital.
Got it.
I still had, like, a little bit left.
Yeah.
So I decided to break it out and make some cookies from it.
Yeah. You should
but,
try like a plant-based butter and see how that works for you. I have a couple good suggestions. I'll tell you later.
Yeah? Plant-based butter?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. There's a few that are awesome. I heard my mom this weekend. I was home in Jersey and Philly visiting, and my mom and her like best friends since like kindergarten were hanging out, and they were both – talking about this one plant-based butter. I didn't bring it up for the record. They brought it up, yeah. and they were talking about how awesome this plant-based butter is. And I'm like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's yeah. so many good options out there. Like, this like vegan boom wouldn't be happening if right. if all the options were complete garbage. Like, right. all these people wouldn't just be
here we go. You're going to like, turn me into vegan with the edibles, you know? There you go.
Just, it's better for you than butter, you know? I mean, some of them are still made of just like organic yeah. plastic instead of regular plastic.
I don't really care.
Plastic.
I mean, if I make the cookies, it's not really like you taste the butter that much, you know?
So yeah, totally.
It's fine, yeah. If you want to join us today, we do have a guest in the studio. He'll be joining us in just a moment. You can go to Facebook, the LA Talk Radio Facebook page, and see us streamed over there. We're going to have a great show, great filmmaker.
Come
and watch us. See how beautiful we are.
So
today it's
pretty.
Beautiful outside, actually.
It is.
Were you here when it rained a lot yesterday? Did
yeah,
you get here when
I was flying
still
in.
Raining?
Yeah, flight.
It was pouring here.
I know. I had a 6 a.m. flight from Philly to Minneapolis and then Minneapolis to LAX.
Right.
And it was pouring and the descent was really rough.
Really?
We kept dropping and everyone, like, people were kind of like, woo! Like, oh, yeah, like, it was a little scary. I was just closing my eyes like, don't throw up, don't throw up.
Yeah. What was the flight to New York? Was it fine? I mean,
it was fine. Lucky enough, we had an open seat between me and the guy. Unpopular opinion, I hate a window seat. I hate the window seat. I just really? Feel like I'm trapped, and I feel like I just have to go to the bathroom the whole time.
Yeah,
because I know I have to climb over people if I'm going to make it.
Yeah, over two people, I
yeah,
know.
Yeah, totally. So I only don't mind it when there's no one in the middle seat. So it was just me and then a guy on the end, and we were both kind of like half, like, all our stuff on the middle seat. Just, you know, I don't know. Yeah. And then my flight home... The way there, I had the same situation. I had a window seat with no one in the middle. And then the second layover, I had to sit in the middle.
Oh,
so
God.
I was like, that's the worst.
I know, isn't it?
It's like my neck and my back. And I'm just like, oh.
I know, you don't move.
I hate it. I know.
And your time in New York with the family, was that nice?
Oh, so good. I'm so full, though, because I started that new job a couple of days before I left. So we've just been doing food tastings. We tasted... I think roughly 60 different food items within 2 days. So we did like 20 to 30 one day and 20 to 30 the next day, and then a bunch of wine as well. And then I went home for the holiday and I got in late that night. So I just like pounded a bunch of leftovers and went right to bed. And then that just kicked off the next like 4 or 5 days of just eating like leftovers. And my mom makes like these amazing... they call them like Mexican like wedding cookies. It's like this little almond ball with like butter and powdered sugar all over them. They're so good. God. And I'm really still full right now, to be honest with you. I just basically ate for the past week straight.
What are you supposed to at Thanksgiving week?
I know. It kills me, though.
And did you see some friends
I did.
That you missed?
I did. I got to see my best friend. He just moved into a house in Philly that he's been renovating for months. So it was really cool. I went there and we kind of just organized the place, which is funny because he's helped me so many times reorganize my place in New York. He'd come up and we'd just hole up and... When you live in a studio, you have to reorganize so many times.
I suppose, right?
Yeah, totally. You just like get so sick of your space. You're like, I gotta change it.
But, oh God, I could never live there, man. I don't know how you did it.
I don't know how I did it either.
Yeah,
with great insanity. But your weekend was good?
Yeah, my weekend was good. I wanted to go to the snow, but then I realized it was good that I didn't because you needed chains, snow chains, and everything. You know, and I. Didn't want to get into that.
What do you mean snow chains?
Like for the tires. You guys don't have them back east, right?
Yeah, no, we don't.
Here we need them because I don't know why. I mean, why is it we need them here and not there? I don't know.
You guys don't know.
You put chains on your tires so you don't.
The traction.
Yeah, so you don't slide on the on the snow.
They have something like that to put on your shoes when you go hiking, too. It looks kind of like a chain or a spring or something.
Right. Maybe it's because back east they... They put salt and stuff on the roads, right?
Oh, and they don't do that here?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely why. Yeah, the salt destroys everything, man.
Right.
Destroys everything. Your shoes, it just eats away. And
Cars too, right?
Yeah, I feel bad for people's like pets and stuff walking with their little bare paws all over the salt.
The things we have to worry about.
I know, right?
Yeah.
First world problems.
Well, we're going to bring on our guest right now who's sitting here patiently. Go ahead, get close to the mic. We're joined by Raed Al-Samari. Welcome to the show, sir.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. You guys were talking about back east and stuff before the show,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you live in New York.
I do, yeah.
No. Oh, now you do?
Yeah, I've
really?
Lived in New York for the past almost 4 years now.
Oh, really? Yeah. And you're visiting here now?
I am, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
For what? For your film and everything
visiting,
promoting
yeah,
the film?
To promote the film, and it's screening next week at New Filmmakers LA at a
Amazing.
Screening co-hosted by the Academy.
Congrats, wow. That's really cool.
It's really exciting, yeah.
Are you going to
be
here for that?
I will, yes.
So you're staying from now till then?
Yeah.
Cool.
And then I'll be back in New York.
Oh, yeah. That bird's freezing.
Yeah.
What's it like for you? Do you like living there?
I do. I love it. I mean, I grew up in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, so I guess on some level I craved winter.
Yeah. I know. Isn't it funny, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you probably don't get a lot of winter there, right?
We do, but it's like a 2 month winter.
Right.
And it's really like LA nights right now is really
right.
the best way to describe
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Rarely rains probably, right?
No, it rains like 2 days a year.
Oh my God.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
How
I know.
Different the sky is depending on where you are.
Yeah.
Like it's insane.
I know. Well, we're for a change getting some rain, but it hasn't rained a lot here either, so don't feel bad, you know.
It rained yesterday, though. Which
yeah,
was,
it did.
Yeah.
Felt like
did
a
yesterday.
Miracle in LA. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It was, you know. It's really a blessing to get some rain here. You
I know, especially with all the fires and stuff. Hopefully we won't get any anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's
and
hope so.
So tomorrow it's going to be stormy as well, which, again, I'm looking forward to that. I like it, you know, because we don't get enough of it here. So you grew up in Riyadh. And do you have siblings, brothers, sisters?
I do.
Do you have a big family?
I'm the eldest of four.
Yeah. Oh, four. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not as bad. Some families have nine people.
Yeah, no, we're then, not
okay.
that big.
Not necessarily in Arabic countries, but in some places they have really huge families, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't like Arabs usually have like bigger families?
I mean, yeah, I have like uncles and aunts who have eight children.
Really?
Wow.
It's not uncommon, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
why is that? They don't know of birth control or they just love all the people, right?
I think there's just this culturally having kids meant status back in the day.
Really?
Mm. And, so
and each one can work and bring
children.
Money home and stuff,
exactly.
Too.
There's that idea, too.
That's true.
They're,
wow.
they're money makers.
You had to replenish all the money it costs to have kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So create money makers for the family. Money generators.
Take care of mom and dad.
And so what was your childhood like? I mean, you know, and we're going to talk about the status of women and stuff in those countries. But you as a man, what was your childhood like? I mean, was it easy?
I was really lucky to have a family that was really supportive ultimately, and and that's what it's about, I guess, no matter where you're living.
Right.
And I went to an American high school there.
Oh, wow. So you developed an attraction to the U.S. early on in your life.
I mean, it was a little bit of a no-brainer to go to the U.S. if I wanted to get the degrees I wanted and study.
But much younger than that. I mean, wait a minute. You went to American school in high school?
In Riyadh, yeah.
In high school?
Yes.
And you already planned on making movies and things like that?
I guess at about 16, 17, I kind of knew.
Oh,
it
really?
It took a while to really verbalize that I wanted to direct exactly.
Right.
But I knew I wanted to tell stories and making films felt a lot less lonely than writing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, for sure.
And I took some time to go to college, and it wasn't really till during college that I managed to verbalize it to myself and really see a path for myself a little bit.
Right.
Because I think when you're growing up, you're just not used to seeing people like you making films.
Yeah.
And I ironically grew up on a lot of, you know, Hollywood stuff and later in life, European cinema. But it wasn't until I moved to the U.S., ironically, that I discovered a lot of Arab and Middle Eastern filmmakers.
That had to be inspiring.
It was very, yeah. And that's when, yeah, I guess in my early 20s, I decided I wanted to make films.
Very cool.
I love that.
So, and you get support from your family too, which is pretty nice, right?
It's great. Yeah, they were always supportive.
Right away, they were supportive.
Or did it
take some convincing?
It took a little bit of convincing. They were naturally worried because they too didn't know where this would go.
Sure. Right.
For a little context, when I started film school, when I started my master's and moved to New York, there weren't any movie theaters back home in Saudi Arabia. Mm. So I sort of lucked out in that the 30-year ban on cinemas was just lifted last year.
Wow. A 30-year ban.
Yeah, it was since the late 70s.
Why is that? They didn't want people to see Western culture?
I think, you know, there were a lot of politics involved. It was
like a control thing.
After the Iranian Revolution in 1979, there was a move towards conservatism throughout the region.
Oh.
And the U.S. government actually had a part in that.
Really?
If you actually look at the history books, the CIA sent a memo to crack down on religious extremism with more. So we found ourselves in a more conservative, society.
Wow.
And then luckily over the past decade or really over the past few years, a lot of opportunities have been opening up and movie theaters are now...
They brought them back and...
They're very much there.
Wow.
Right. Yeah.
So that sort of like shut down the film industry in Saudi Arabia too, right? I mean, it wasn't just Western films you couldn't see.
We weren't making very many features. There were a few filmmakers. Haifa Al-Mansour came out with her film Wajda.
Uh-huh.
And it was released and did very well in the U.S. and abroad, but we didn't have movie theaters.
Oh, okay.
But the reality is people were making content mainly on YouTube and on television and other mediums.
Right. And now, were they allowing people to see movies at home, or was that banned?
Very much so. I had a huge collection of DVDs, and most people I know did, and...
And that was legal, right? I mean, that was okay.
Totally, yeah.
Oh, okay. So they just didn't want people to get together and watch a movie? I mean, what is it?
I mean, there's a lot of history to it, but it's, I think the idea of having those public spaces is kind of new to us right now to experience content.
Wow. How do you think that's going to change culture over there?
I mean, it's already a game changer. It was an honor with my last short film, Dunya's Day. We got to screen that film in a movie theater in my hometown.
Oh, amazing.
Back in January. And
nice.
Just seeing people in a multiplex in Riyadh was surreal. And right now, movie theaters are very much booming. There's a joke on Saudi Twitter, actually, about how it's easier to book a flight than to book a movie ticket, because they're just constantly, everything is sold out.
Yeah.
But it's, it's exciting.
Very
Congratulations
cool.
for over there, you know, that's really, really cool that's happening, you know, that it wasn't happening before.
Thank you. I mean, I couldn't have wished for better timing to be making this film, yeah.
Now, growing up there, did you feel limited in the things you could do and things like that, like as far as culture? How do they treat music, like Western music? Is that
fortunately
that
I didn't
too?
I mean, it's complicated. There's been a little bit of a shift lately. When I grew up, I listened to music. I actually grew up listening to hip-hop, and my uncles grew up in the U.S. and loved hip-hop, and a lot of young Saudis listened to music and had, you know, we had like cassettes and then CDs. And
didn't we
all? I had a Walkman back in the day.
A good old Walkman.
So it was very much, it was frowned upon by particularly older generations, but we all grew up listening to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And right now we have like concerts and I think Future and Lil Wayne and stuff we're just playing in Riyadh a few days ago.
Oh, nice. I guess, you know, now with the internet and everything, globalization, it's hard to keep this stuff away, you know, from people. And so they'll get into it no matter what. You know? Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Internet's a powerful place.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Never so, I mean, you get to see that other people listen to music and you want it too, you know? I mean, like they have in Hong Kong now, you know? It's like they love the U.S., you know? Suddenly there's awakening of democracy and everything. And, you know, it's because they see what's going on in other places. And they say we could have that too, you know? So,
why not join the party, you know?
Totally. I
mean, yeah, exactly, you know.
And we're a population that's, last I heard, about 70% of the population is 30 and under.
Oh, really?
So the
young generation is making the changes there.
It's really exciting to just see young people out. In public, doing all kinds of things back home. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, wow. It's a whole new world.
It is.
You know?
Very much so, yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, and we're going to get to your film in just a moment, Dunia's Day. But before that, let's talk a little bit about the status of women in Saudi Arabia. I think it's not a secret that they are very limited in what they can do, right? Especially in public.
That's actually changed very drastically over the last few years.
Really? We've heard of the driving now. They allow some or all of them to drive.
Women can drive. Yeah. Women of all ages, as long as they have a license, can drive. And they've been driving everywhere.
Really?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any speeding tickets, just like, yeah.
So, I mean, have they been allowed to go out alone, though? I mean...
Definitely. I mean, we have, like, malls and coffee shops and an entire sort of economy that's driven mainly by women.
It's
and
so
they're,
cool.
You know, working in shops, and these are all things that, you know, back when I was a kid were unthinkable.
Yeah.
And right now they're, you know, very much the norm. Very recently they lifted the requirement to travel, because that's another thing that's been a little controversial abroad.
Oh, needing to travel with a man?
Needing a male's permission to travel.
Same. Can you imagine?
And that's finally been changed. So now, you know, a woman who's of age, just like a man, 21 and over and older, can travel without permission.
Really? Even overseas?
That is so incredible. So applause
even overseas?
To them.
Yes. Oh. So we've had some major progress over the past few years. And
yeah. But it is only the past few years. I mean, women couldn't leave the house without a man, right?
No, women could leave the house for a while, even while I was growing up. The only difference is, you know, we had, there were certain rules about where women could work, for example.
Okay.
So they were sort of limited to schools and hospitals and more gender segregated places back in the day. And now women are bankers and... cashiers and
what about like being a doctor or lawyer or anything? Are they there yet?
Women are lawyers now. Yeah.
Great.
And the first female lawyers could practice in court in the late 2000s. So it is gradual. It's been happening sort of gradually.
Do you find that the men are open to it, or do you find that there's still, do you ever see kind of men kind of laughing at the women who are gaining power?
Most of the men I know have been really embracing this change.
That's really great.
It's definitely cheaper for men not to have to hire drivers or pay for Ubers.
It's so to pick up women too.
The fact that it's economically helpful having women out there and working and in all seriousness
takes the pressure off them too.
Totally.
And in politics too? Are they able to get into politics?
Yes, actually, our ambassador in the United States is a woman, Princess Rima Bint Bandar, and a fan of the film.
Really?
I learned recently, it's great.
Oh my God, big applause to them with all that progress. Yeah.
So that's cool. So you became a filmmaker, you came out here, right?
To New York, yes.
To New York, I mean.
Yeah.
Did you come by yourself or with family? How did that happen?
I went to college in Boston initially. I went to Harvard and I studied post-colonial studies there.
Wow. To Harvard. I mean, my God, you know.
Yeah.
That meant you were a pretty good student. Very good student.
I tried, yeah.
Yeah. Good for you.
It
Was it hard being a foreign student getting into Harvard?
I mean, it's hard moving anywhere away from your parents at age 17.
Right.
Let alone a place like Harvard with a lot of, you know, overachievers who are told they're the best.
Yeah, their whole life.
Their whole life, yeah. All in one place. So there was a little bit of culture shock.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, I learned a lot about myself and where I come from. And and I learned a lot that I wouldn't necessarily have learned had I gone straight to film school.
Right. Wow. Those were some topics, though, that how do you get a job in those things, you know, like post-colonial studies and things like that? You'd have to be a professor or something.
The luxury of a Harvard education, I'm told at least, is you can study whatever you want and not have to think of a job.
Really?
People who study art history often end up on Wall Street.
Really?
Doing the opposite of that.
Yeah. Wow. So many people getting degrees are doing the complete opposite.
Totally. So I sort of had this, you know, I went in with this mentality of, I know I want to be a filmmaker eventually.
Right.
But I don't necessarily have to pick up a camera now when I'm 18. And I sort of just want to learn a little bit about the world and about, you know, where I'm from.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, ironically, going to Boston helped learn about a lot of filmmakers.
Really?
From my part of the world.
Yeah. Very cool. So you were there, and then you said you went to graduate school. Where did you go?
I did, yeah. I moved back briefly. I moved home briefly to Riyadh. And,
okay.
Did some stuff there, mostly on YouTube for a startup there.
Oh, nice.
And then I, and it was a lot of fun to just...
Well, did you create content there?
Meet other talent there. Yes, I was producing and helping with casting.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things, my friend, Sara Nawasra and I, who ended up producing Dunya's Day, were working on there were to try to get more Saudi men. Addition of sort of mostly male stand-ups doing short form video content.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things we were fighting for is, you know, women can be and are just as funny and should be given a space to do that.
That's right.
Yes. So I spent some time really, and I learned a lot doing what we were doing there. And then I got into NYU for grad school, and I moved to New York, and I've stuck around since.
Yeah. And what did you do in grad school? Was that in film? Did you get into film?
It was in film, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
So that's when I started making short films and eventually made Dunya's Day.
How many films did you make before you got to Dunya's Day?
I made three shorts that were a lot smaller in scale. One of them was a documentary, another was black and white on 16mm film. Mm. They were sort of a way to just, I guess, slowly learn and flex a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
But Dunya's Day was my first short of this length and scale.
Oh, okay. And how long is the film?
It's 14 minutes.
14 minutes. So yes. That's about what, average for a short film, would you say?
Yeah, a lot of the ones I see are around the 15-minute mark, 15 give minute, or take. Yeah,
15, yeah. 20, yeah.
Yeah.
I know we've had a couple that were like almost 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, a couple, yeah.
Yeah, but that's kind of long for a short film. What did you
those
say?
Those are some longer shorts. I've seen some great ones that are 25 minutes too, so I guess it really depends on the story you have to tell.
For sure.
Yeah.
Right, but in 14 minutes, God, you have to squeeze in a lot quickly, right?
I guess that was the challenge with this one, yeah.
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 So who wrote the film? Did you write it?
I wrote it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And writing about a woman, I mean, that's very interesting, you know. How were you able to do that?
It's a responsibility. I had to listen a lot. It helped that my producer and a lot of my team were women from Riyadh who understood that world of all women's graduation parties and the character I was writing about.
Right.
But I really had to just talk to a bunch of, you know, female relatives and friends and, you know, people working on this film as well and take their advice constantly and listen to their take on the script.
Yeah. Do they feel like you've done it justice? Do they feel like it's accurate?
Unless they're lying to me, good.
Well, he's surrounding really himself great, with people, you know. I mean, and they're part of it and stuff. I see you're surrounded by a lot of Sarahs. There's like three of them here, right?
That was a running joke on set. You'd really, say Sarah? And like who are you talking to? Responding,
right. So let's give credit to the actors first of all, and so I see there's like three main characters in the movie?
Yes.
Okay, and so what are their names, the real names?
So their real names are Sara Belghnim. She played Dunya, the lead character.
Okay.
Rahaf played Dima, who's sort of the second in command.
Uh-huh.
And we had
Sara Altawil.
Sara Altawil, another Sara, played Dalal, yes.
Oh, wow. So, okay, so let's find out a little bit about the story. The movie is called Dunya's Day, and so tell us what it's about. You mentioned graduation.
Sure. So it's, in a nutshell, about a young woman named Dunya in Riyadh who, on the day of her big graduation soiree, is abandoned by all her domestic help. Uh-huh. And she and her two friends have to fight to put together
the party,
the perfect party.
Wow. Mm. Yeah. Now, why did the staff leave? I mean, how many were there that left?
There's a truckload of them in the opening shots of the really? Film. Yeah.
And they all left at the same time.
Yeah. The impression we get is they're sort of fed up with Dunya. And when you meet her, you get she's, you know, a personality who takes no bullshit.
Like a diva almost?
Can be intimidating. Exactly. Yeah. She is a diva, yeah.
Love it. Love it.
And part of the reason I made this film was we see a lot of tropes of Arab and Muslim women in the media that, you know, sometimes really important stories about war and poverty that do need to be told. But I find that one of the effects of those has been we've sort of been conditioned to see Arab and Muslim women as victims or saints to a degree that's not really human.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I sort of wanted to make a film, you know, I grew up watching irreverent films like Mean Girls and Heathers, and it was exciting to try to make a film like that that's so true to the women I grew up around from my hometown.
Right.
Because the reality is, you know, there's a lot more nuance to the Arab world, and there are all kinds of Arab women, and true diversity and representation means being able to see women play all those roles and not just,
It's so important to have films. What I love about film is, you know, I feel like it's a way that actually helps people connect and helps people listen and helps people learn. So I think it's really cool to make films about diversity and things like that. You know, people sometimes don't really think outside themselves or really consider what other people are going through, or they get these, you know, ideas and build these narratives about what it's like, you know, to be an Arab woman or live in another place, and it's completely wrong, you know, or it's like not accurate, you know, just like people have things that they think Americans are like that. I'm sure that's true for some people, but you know, it's
exactly,
we all have so much diversity in us, and it's great to celebrate that and to share it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really awesome.
Wow. So now the actors, the producer, what's the name of her? The producer?
Also Sara, yeah. Sara Nostra, yeah.
Right. And so how did you connect with her to make the film?
So Sara and I go way back. We actually went to school together in Riyadh.
Oh, really?
To high school, yeah.
Wow. And then you sort of like re-met here?
We met before. We worked together before I went to grad school, when I was working at Tilfaz 11. That's the comedy startup. So we met, and that's when we started, both of us really started working in film. But I've known her since I was about 14 or 15.
Wow,
we went
how
to the
cool.
same high school together. And, she studied psychology in Illinois. So we both went to very cold places and then met back again in Riyadh,
to say the least.
Yeah.
Well, so you met back in Riyadh and then you decided to make the film?
Exactly.
Did you go to her and tell her,
I mean,
this
I
is
went
what
to
I want
to
do?
Essentially, it was like, I have to make this short film for grad school and I don't want to make another thing in New York. I really want to make something back home.
Right.
And I have this idea, and it might be insane, but are you in? And she thankfully was.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
the insane
cool.
ones are always the best ideas. They're yeah. always the ones.
Yeah. And then the rest of the crew, how did you get them? I see you have, I don't know, they seem to be also not American, right? Are they all Saudis?
For the most part, yes. All our department heads on set, other than the cinematographer, were actually right. Saudi women or Arab women who were from Riyadh.
Wow, how cool.
And then the cinematographer, Olivier Touria, was my classmate from NYU and a really good friend of mine and a great cinematographer from Spain.
Right.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
so you're all surrounded by women and stuff. I can see how you'd enjoy making a movie like this, you know. I mean, get a little different perspective and everything. You always have like sausage fest when you make movies and stuff.
I know.
So it's nice to have some women around.
I do a lot of crew work as well, and there, it's always just like me and a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, right.
You know, always.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason we did it, we had so many women on board, and it was important to do it that way, was because our actors were all women, and they needed to feel comfortable on set. And yeah. they were already, it was so brave of them at the time to step up and want to be in this film.
Right.
And so the least we could do is have an environment where they felt really comfortable and actively part of the process. And the way to do that was to have mostly female collaborators.
Right.
That's really great. Yeah.
So back to the film. So they all left. And she was left with her two friends to put the party together.
Yes.
Now, do they have graduation parties like this usually there, or was that more like, you know, sampling an American thing?
No, it's very much accurate to, I mean, I wanted to set this in a very specific slice of Riyadh society. I guess a privileged, among a privileged class.
Right, upper class.
It is very normal to have sort of graduation parties that are like the Met Gala.
Right.
And, you know, one of the characters in the film is vegan, and that's another thing I wanted to sort
Yay.
Of...
There you go.
Represent.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is, you know, those sort of... that movement is global, and they're very
oh, yeah.
much... women in Riyadh. My sister, my 16-year-old sister, has been vegan for several years. And she's not the only girl who's vegan back home. So there was, you know, value in sort of breaking stereotypes in a way that's, I guess, fun and showing people a sort of unexpected side to, yeah, I guess, you know, there's more in common between rich people everywhere than
yeah,
we like
right.
to think.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of rich people in Saudi Arabia?
Because
it's a rich country. You have a lot of oil and all that.
I
but.
Don't know about the exact statistics, but we luckily have a larger middle class than some of our neighbors.
Yeah. Probably even here, too. You know, I mean,
yeah.
our middle class is shrinking in California, in case you haven't noticed.
All over the U.S. Yeah. it's shrinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. But so you have upper middle class as well there.
We do, a large
right.
one. And that's
sort you
of
mentioned
the world
she has
where this film is set.
Yeah. yeah, if she has a staff, obviously they have money, right?
Definitely,
in
yeah.
In family. So, so does this end up being a comedy then?
It is. I mean, there is an element of satire in it. I am trying to sort of satirize that obsession with social status.
Sure.
But I think there are also moments that kind of ask you to empathize with the character. And what surprised me was hearing from audiences after screenings that tell me they felt a little sad.
Really?
At some point in the film. Uh-huh. And I think that's just a testament to our lead actress and her performance. But it's, you know, I had an old writing teacher of mine come up and say it starts as a satire, but then... unlike most satires, it challenges you to really feel mm-hmm. for the character. And that really was like the ultimate reward, hearing people felt for her.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's a success of the writing of the character, too.
I mean, I hope so, but I know a lot of it is the performance too. We were really lucky to to end up casting Sara Belghnaim in the lead role.
Right. Now, so what, I mean, you wrote this, you know, what made you choose that kind of topic?
I think I wanted to make something fun set in my hometown. And I wanted to, I guess I really, it started with, I followed a teacher's advice that said, make a film only you can make and hopefully not only you can watch. And then it was kind of the perfect marriage of character and location. So the character, like I said, came from a result of just wanting to write this Arab woman who's very much flawed but fierce and very, you know, different than the tropes we're used to seeing.
Right.
And I was, you know, I always loved films that have a quote-unquote unlikable protagonist.
Sure.
And then, like, challenge you to love them. And it started from a place of wanting to do that. And then having access to the location we did.
Yeah.
People have these, they call them farms in the outskirts of Riyadh, but they're really way more elaborate than that. They're more like guest houses, estates of sorts.
House.
And so we had, you know, generous access to that location. And so the film really started as, you know, the perfect marriage of location and character.
Right.
Yeah.
What about budget and stuff like this? I mean, was this done as a student film?
It was. So I had a little bit of support from NYU.
Right.
But we made it extremely low budget. It was an independent production with a lot of help from friends and family back home.
Right.
Sort of cutting favors. Our production designer was a friend of mine from high school also.
Very cool.
Who, you know, had never been on a film set. Our costume designer was this Saudi woman who had a line of abayas, and she was fresh out of medical school and really wanted to just be involved with the film.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, so you don't have to.
So we were really lucky to, yeah.
Yeah, so you really rely on talent for to tell the story. You don't need all those settings and effects and things like that.
I mean, I couldn't afford anything for this one. Right. Yeah, the reality, it had to be a labor of love for like everybody involved. Yeah,
that's what I love so much about film. It's so collaborative. You know, you can't do it without other people's support.
Yeah, you wish you could, but there's no way.
Do you really though wish you could?
Don't.
I think it's so great
actually,
to just the connections you make with people on set or.
And it's
incredible.
Also, I mean, the most,
it's my favorite.
Yeah. And then the most rewarding thing is to watch this thing you wrote become something entirely different because of the way other people see it. And those other people being your collaborators.
Yeah. And it's almost better than you imagined.
Totally. Yeah. So to just, you know, see your script through the eyes of your cinematographer and to have your actors sort of, I mean, we were lucky to sort of have the time to do a lot of improv on this one as well, guided improv, and to see your actors sort of come up with something you in your wildest dreams could never think of is really rewarding too. And I think only in film can you have a rapport like that with people.
Right.
Love it.
And I understand the film is well received, right? You won a couple of awards and everything.
Yeah, I mean, we were really lucky to premiere at Sundance and win the jury award there for international fiction. Yeah.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Really?
That's a big one.
That was a dream, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you heading for the Oscar too? You being considered?
Hopefully. I mean, the film is Oscar qualified.
Right.
And, we've played near 30 festivals now, mostly in the U.S. So
wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
So they would look at that, right?
I hope so. I mean, whether or not it makes it, I'm very proud of the film, and I'm proud of the fact that it's getting seen.
Right.
By a lot of people in different societies. I mean, we played Mexico City and Durban, South Africa, and Cairo just now. And to have, you know, especially young women from those places come up to me and recognize the character in their lives or in themselves. is really the most rewarding thing.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's cool. I mean, a guy being able to write from a women's perspective is pretty cool, you know? I mean, it's a big leap, you know?
And for sure.
Not everybody can do that, you know?
It's not easy. I mean, a lot of the directors I look up to, Pedro Almodovar, Asghar Farhadi, who's one of, like, the Iranian greats.
Okay.
They've all written for women better than they've written for men, arguably.
Really?
So there is precedent, and I think, you know, it really comes from a place of, I think, you know, a woman can write a man just as well as I can.
Sure.
It really just comes from a place of, you know, whatever character you want to write, really knowing them.
Right.
Trying to know them intimately and
yeah,
listening.
Being a versatile writer, you know, I mean, you're not just locked in into one thing. You can imagine different situations, different people.
For sure. Yeah. And for me, imagining, you know, a woman's life like Dunya's is easier than imagining the life of a man who's, you know, very removed from my experience, who maybe grew up in another city in Saudi Arabia in a smaller town.
Right.
You know, I'm very much a city boy.
Yeah.
So there are... yeah, there's always, I guess, when you're writing, there's always things that are sort of innately different to you that you kind of have to make more relatable and try to understand.
Right.
And that's why it's such a responsibility. And writing for another gender is no different. It's just a responsibility.
Being the voice of someone else, you know?
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, well, amen to that. The movie's Dunya's Day. Are we going to be able to see it anywhere soon or... Because I know short films, they're usually in the festivals. And
you said a screening next week.
It's screening on Saturday the 14th at New Filmmakers LA.
Oh, out here?
Out here, yeah.
Okay.
At the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences.
Wow.
And it's co-hosted by the Arab Film and Media Center in San Francisco.
Very cool.
Can anyone go see that?
Anyone can go see that. Tickets are on sale online. It's a screening, an In Focus on Arab cinema screening.
Great.
And you guys should check it out.
Yeah. I'd love to.
Raed Al-Samari, thank you so much for joining us. How can people find out more about the film? Do you have like Instagram or things like that?
Me and the film are both on Instagram.
Okay.
Look up Dunya's Day. It's on all platforms.
Okay.
Dunyasday. Dunya's Day. And I'm on Instagram only as of now. Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you. You're very inspiring. You know, I mean, I find your story, very interesting, very unique and original. And I mean, your own story and the film. So I congratulate you for that.
Thank you so much. I've been very lucky to have, you know, the greatest collaborators and just...
Yeah, you really have, you know.
Impeccable timing back home, too. Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thanks
for your hard work.
So yeah, and thank you for coming and everything, and good luck to you in the future. What's in the future for you, real quick?
I'm actually developing a feature that's an expansion of Dunya's Day. It's same character and tone.
Uh-huh.
In a nutshell, getting married.
Oh, okay.
And I think there's a lot to explore in a wedding from my hometown. And
that's
I'm
true.
Excited to make that film.
Like
the
Arab fat Greek weddings.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, if it's half as funny as that film, that'd be great. Yeah.
Right. Oh, well.
Thank you so much for coming today.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so
much. Awesome. And much continued success to you. And we wish you all the best. And maybe we'll see you at the Oscars too, you know.
Thank you. I hope so. Great meeting you.
Fingers
both.
Crossed. You too.
All right. Thanks. All right, Jen.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you. Bye everybody.
Bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.